Hi, good afternoon, everybody. It's a real pleasure to be able to bring this presentation to you and to participate in APHA. I wanted to start off by just giving you a little bit of background in terms of what we are going to be doing here. I think I'm required to kind of read this out, but here it is. I have no relationships to disclose. So this is really kind of giving you a sense of what I'm going to talk about. For me, timing has been everything in the work that we've been doing in Louisville. And it's really the program I'm going to discuss with you today is really, I've kind of given it the overarching theme of where necessity meets opportunity. So I think the prequel will give you some background. So it really tells you, gives you a sense of the context in which we started the work. The precipitating necessity tells you about some of the challenges and the actual challenges that really generated us to get the program going. My theory of change really is based on the work that we've done in Louisville and what we've learned. And so really, essentially, health equity is everybody's work, and I've underscored it as everybody's work. And then the program solution. And it really is a question of where preparedness met opportunity. So that's the overarching. So here's the prequel. The Center for Health Equity was started in 2006 by our prior Director of Health, Dr. Adewale Troutman, who is currently, as you know, the president of APHA. And so when he started, the center was the first center of its kind in a public agency. And so we had no roadmap as to what we would do and how we would do it. But there were certainly some great ideas about what needed to be done, and there were, you know, the practice has grown, the evidence was growing. We continued. We actually started off. We were in this historic home in the west side of Louisville. In part, we frequently say that we are embedded in the community because that's where the work is. Also, you probably all know about unnatural causes, and we were featured in that. So that was a really important piece of work about advertising the work that we do and also featuring Louisville. We've also used that video and all the parts of it to, you know, to a great extent in our educational programs in all that we do. We've done different versions of it and spoken with various people. But there was one part of the conversation that was always more difficult for us to have. And so we actually sought after and went after a grant with the American Healing and the W.K. Kellogg Foundation to start talking about race. We frequently talk about stuff in Louisville and about health equity, and we usually frame it in race and race, health equity and race. Race presents an additional barrier, but it's not an easy conversation to have. And so we've been working with the Kellogg Foundation for the last, since 2010, and we did a couple of years of programming, and we learned a lot from that. So what I want to emphasize to you is that there, we don't know all the answers, but it's always a learning process. You have to be willing to go forth with your best effort and learn along the way and measure your progress more than anything else. So one of the things we were able to afford, too, in part from the racial healing grant that we got from the Kellogg Foundation, was to support our health equity report, and that came out at the end of 2011. It really was the first time we had a strong bench of data as to what was happening in our community and looking at all the social determinants of health, all the things that are health, socioeconomic and race, et cetera. So we looked at that. So all of those things were put together. Another piece of the puzzle, which not a lot of people know, but we started off when I took over leadership of the center 2.5, nearly 3 years ago, we also had this particular slide, and our current director, after Dr. Troutman left, looked at that slide, and we looked at the numbers, and we looked at injury and violence as being one of the things that we also needed to look at. As you can see on the far left there, black males are, you know, in terms of homicides, was very, very high. So I reached out to NACHO, and we participated in their pilot program where we looked at injury and violence and their capacity assessment tool. That finished in April. It was a very quick program, and that really gave us a lot of background in terms of what was the homicide rates in our community, et cetera. We all knew them. We kind of mapped them. We also, I think, a big part of the conversation was suicides. And I think one of the first meetings that we had when we were looking at, when we pulled together several community members, including one of the assistant police chiefs, She came into the meeting and she said, well, this morning we already had 3 suicides. And everybody looked up and they said, really? And it was not in the paper. There was no word about it. But obviously, as you saw with the previous map, we have a lot of homicides, but my gosh, we have a whole lot more suicides, and they're not as concentrated as people think. But we have a culture in which we talk about homicides, and we paint particular pictures of particular parts of our community, and we leave out a whole other part of the conversation. So anyway, this is April, and then on May the 17th at 1 p.m., so this is broad daylight, we had a spate of gun violence, and we had a triple homicide. And what was particularly shocking about that incident is that the third homicide happened in front of the police and the first responders. That was the nature and the depth of the trauma in our community, and the person in the middle of that picture is our mayor. He kind of looked, you can see the stress in his eyes. We were all literally very stressed out that this could happen. So it's a good news, bad news story, because it was so bad that it galvanized the community that everybody needed to do something. I'd already published my health equity report, and we got a lot of press. But I have to tell you that this particular incident, it was in the spring. Everybody was looking forward to great weather and a great summer, and this was not what we were looking to see. However, the background to all of this, and a lot of this is in our report, is here is Louisville Metro. So Louisville Metro, Louisville and Jefferson County merged in 2003, so we are a kind of city-county government. So I'll just give you very quickly what the background is. As you can see, household income, 46% of African-American households live on the $25,000 per year. So you can see, you know, some of those numbers, and we talk about them a lot. Educational attainment, as you can see, less than 25% of African Americans have a degree, and that's even when we include associate degrees. And so when we come down to health equity, people know those numbers, and frequently in Louisville we kind of think, oh, well, West Louisville, that's the kind of stuff. Even when we had the shooting, even though there was a very good response, the perception was, well, that's just West Louisville. But here's the data. Here's the data that race matters. So West Louisville is on the west side of, and you can see that we have significant concentration or reconcentrations and segregation in terms of neighborhoods in our community. And this again gives you another sense of, even though the metro rate for the number of households, families who earn less than $15,000 is 9.8%, as you can see, the majority of neighborhoods that we have up there earn significantly less, 4 times as much in the worst areas. And so place matters. Place matters for health very strongly. And as you can see, we have up to 15 years difference in life expectancy depending on where you live in Louisville. So people kind of know this in Louisville. They kind of don't know the numbers, etc. But I think it was really brought home to us. And so I'm going to give you a little bit about, and I put that as the context for families, and so that's where kids live in Louisville. That's the context in which they grow up. And as public health professionals, we frequently look at these kinds of data to think about what are the things that are important for kids or young people. So this is also another chart. We are data-driven. Here's another chart that tells you a little bit about what are the 10 primary health conditions that kids under 20 are inpatient. And you can see homicides and suicides are way down the bottom. There are relatively few. But if you look at the top, you can see that a whole lot of kids are in the hospital for mental and emotional diagnoses and unintentional injuries. So this is the kind of data, the context in which we were doing our work. And if you look at our YBRSS and you look at just with those two top numbers, emotional support and violence, you can see that significant number of kids, and these are kids in school, are saying that more than 10% said they attempted suicide one or more times, felt sad or helpless, they were in a physical fight, nearly 30%, or carried a weapon to school, 22.8%. So we have a merged school district, so it's not even as if they're all in one part of the community. Kids are bused across our community, so we're clearly not solving all the issues that we have. So that was the context in which we did the program planning. And I use this slide more as to kind of bring the theoretical understanding to it. As you can see in the outer circle, the environment and the organizational context, that's really kind of, I showed you what our organizational context was, the work we were doing, the situation in which we live, and then the discussion was, what can we do, quick, fast, and in a hurry, to start thinking about what the community or what, as the center, we could do. The mayor immediately convened what was called a violence reduction task force. And as the center, I decided that it was a time for, given all the knowledge that we had and the work that we'd been doing, it was an opportunity for us to start something that we'd been thinking of doing. And so within the socio-ecological model, which we used, and a lot of these slides, and just so you know, we shared them with the kids that we convened. We start with the individual, but we really have to think about the interpersonal relationships, organizations, community, and public policy. So that's where the context in which we did our work. So the program that we launched was called the Healing Futures Fellowship. In that first year, 2012, we planned that program in less than 4 weeks because of the urgency of the need. We knew that summer was coming, and there would be a lot of kids with not a lot to do. And we needed to start thinking about what we could do. So I encourage you, there's a lot of words on those slides, but I encourage you to just look at the things that are highlighted in green. The vision was to engage young voices in thoughtful discussion, dialogue, and exploration of the underlying causes and solutions to violence and inequity. So we were looking at violence in a holistic, socio-ecological model kind of a context. And our goal was to graduate healing ambassadors. We really wanted to have more kids understand what was happening in our community because the whole community was pretty much traumatized at that point. This was also the same time when the whole discussion across the nation was about Trayvon Martin and what that meant and how violence precipitated and those kinds of things as well. And so these are our goals, and I put them here. We'll go through them a little bit more later, but the goal of the program that we developed was to explore the root causes, impacts, and potential solutions to Louisville's incidents of injury and violence with a focus on promoting racial healing in a health equity framework. So even though we were being funded by the Kellogg Foundation and we did not use at least the first year of the program, we were taking all the things that we learned in that program and putting it into this context to make it work. And so our objectives was to investigate community risks and resiliency factors, to explore historical and present-day effects of structural and institutional racism, and to engage in dialogue on the social and ecological model and those kinds of things. So those were our four things. But as we planned the program, we had a lot of discussion about what kind of program. Frequently, when you do research or when you hear about these things, people focus on what they call at-risk kids. It's not a term that I like. But I think it all frequently misses the mark. When you looked at research of what kinds of programs you could start, you could find programs for at-risk kids, and you could find programs for the elite kids who are, you know, very well off. There was nothing in the community for the average kid, the majority of kids, who are exposed to the majority of things around the country, and who are the majority of voters and who will be our future. So that's kind of the lens in which we started, and it actually fits the frame of health equity and being everybody's work. So we had seven pillars, as I like to think about them. Obviously, the no-brainer was equity. We do that work. We know the work. We know the data. So we also talked about diversity. Even though what we had learned through the process since we'd started was, we are located in West Louisville, and yes, that is where the greatest inequities exist. But frequently, if you work with that population, you are preaching to the choir. If you tell them about racism, it's like, what's new? What we found, I think our understanding has been, is that we really, in fact, it's the other folks in our community that really need to start having those discussions. As I pointed out to my team, even if we got every last person in West Louisville to vote for a changing policy, it would not be sufficient to make the changes in policy that we needed. We need the whole community engaged in the discussion, not just in a theoretical sense, but in a real sense about the need to make policy change. So that was the reason for the health equity is everybody's work. Leadership needed to be important because if you're going to have some kids, you need to treat them like adults, but you also have to treat them to actually engage them in the leadership process. And so we also gave them Myers-Briggs. We tried to, so all of these things played together. Partnerships were critical because I did not, when this this problem arose, I did not have money just sitting there waiting to do a program. I happened to have a little money from another program that we were, at that point, it had technically been looked upon as something that we would spend on maybe to buy gun locks. When I first took over the agency, I have to admit I was not particularly impressed about that as being the way to go about solving some of these problems. So we decided that it would be a good thing to use the small amount of money that we had to fund this program. But again, we did not do this on our own. We did this in partnership with multiple partners. And so although I've listed four of them there, we had many, many more. And so this is why I also have to say it's a good news, bad news story. Because of the acts in our community, everybody was ready, willing, and able to step up to the plate and ask to say, count me in. And people asked to be counted in. I had to ask a few people to count themselves in. So excellence was also important, as was quality and fun. So I wanted to create a program that was of premium quality that all kids would enjoy. And the fun part was also important. It had to be fun in learning. So even though we went on canoeing on the Ohio River, it was with a look at what are the environmental impact of sewer overflows and other things like that. So there was a lot of that going on. So I'm going to have to speed up. So here are our goals. I already told you what our objectives were, but we embedded all of those evidence-based curriculum into supporting each of those goals. So it was very much an evidence-based program. And here I'm just going to quickly go through our weekly. Each week had a theme. So our first week was on leadership. We spent the week in Jefferson Memorial Forest doing ropes courses and kids getting to know each other. But we warned them. This was the active fun. This was the thing that was most going to be like summer camp, but it was not summer camp. This was their job. They were going to get a stipend of $1,000, and they had deliverables. And they had to turn up in business casual dress at a minimum, and they had a whole lot of things to do, and their deliverables were the projects and proposals that they would do. So I think I skipped one. So the next week was health equity. We gave them all the basis of health equity. We went to different parts of our community. We talked about injury and violence. We talked about conflict resolution, and our friends at the Muhammad Ali Center helped us lead that. And they provided, you know, every week we were in a different location. Going to different parts of town was also important for the kids who lived in one part of the community to see another part of the community, both going both ways, back and forth. So we had leadership, and then they had a project week. So here are the outputs. We paid a lot of attention to ensuring diversity. We had 150 applications when we put it out, and we had to select 25 fellows because we knew that is all we could provide. We had promised them each $1,000. I did not have a lot of money, but I wanted to make sure that the kids understood and valued the program. Here are the applications. They came from all over our community, but they came, as you can see, there was a stronger interest amongst the African-American parts of our community. And this is what we ended up with in terms of people who came to the classes. So we have the class of 2012, and we were able to repeat it again this past summer with funding from the Kellogg Foundation because we did such good work. And so here's the final class. I'm going to go very quickly. We were able to select, and I think selecting a class that is significantly diverse and ensure the race, gender, all of those things is critical to have those important and critical conversations for the kids to have not only a quality of program, but a quality interaction with each other. And here they met their congressman, John Yarmuth, and they talked about it. They did a lot of leadership. Here are the projects. We encouraged them to produce poster boards in the same level of consistency that college students create, and these are 15 to 18-year-olds. And here are some of the things that they did. They also produced a PSA. I'm not going to show you that today because I knew I would run out of time. So I've got 1 minute left. And then the media group. Media was a big part of one of the themes. We took them also to meet the editorial board at the newspaper, et cetera. And they, for this year, created their own paper. And they presented their solutions to the mayor at their graduation. We also did pre- and post-test, and we found that for all of the major overarching objectives, there was a significance between the pre- and the post-test. And so here are our final results. There was an increase in knowledge for all overarching programs, and so we did weekly evaluations. I've got a sample of 1 week over there. There was an increase between the pre and the post-test for most weekly objectives. Results indicate an improvement in programming and addressing objectives because we had to do quality improvement from year one, which we planned in a great big hurry, to year two. And then the learning experience appears to have been significantly equal to all participants, regardless of gender, age, or grade. So that's the conclusions. Did I press the wrong button? Oh, okay, sorry. These are, I'm just going to go fairly fast. The selection process yielded a really good program, and we still have work to do to increase Hispanic as well as Caucasian participants. And I think we've really made a lot of progress. But I also want to thank, I think, the mayor's engagement in this program, the director, the current director of public health in Louisville, and my team. All of them and all of our partners were critical to our success.